Hello, and welcome to Cisco Tech Beat. I'm Lisa Meek. Today, we're devoting this entire episode to ransomware. Not only is it top of mind with the recent Kaseya VSA supply chain attack, but it is also becoming more and more costly. Just listen to this statistic. The total amount paid by ransomware victims increased by a whopping 311% in 2020. That's reaching nearly $450 million worth of cryptocurrency. And it is no doubt going to be much higher than that by the end of 2021. Joining me to dig deep into all things threat intelligence and security is Craig Williams. He's the director of outreach for Cisco Talos. Hey, Craig, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Craig, you just heard that statistic. I'm sure that doesn't really surprise you at all, huh?
Not at all. You know, ransomware is currently probably the highest profit margin by a couple of extra zeros compared to most types of cybercrime. I think until we get some consequences in place for the actors behind these activities, it's just going to continue to increase and be a burden that business has to deal with.
And as we're seeing right now, you know, the first thing that's still really top of mind for everyone is the Kaseya attack. Let's kick things off with that and tell me what's really new about this most recent ransomware attack.
So the Kaseya attack is a little bit unique. Really what happened here was that the attackers found a vulnerability in a piece of management software that is typically used by service providers. And so once they found this, they could attack the service provider and then ransom all of the customers that they managed. And so think about this. If you look back at the, you know, the instructions and advice we gave medium to small business who didn't have their own security team, it was, hey, hire a managed service provider. They're going to help you figure out security. Your defense posture will be better off for it. Unfortunately, in this case, this particular piece of software had some security issues in itself, and so it effectively acted as a door that let the attackers into all of the service providers' customers' networks.
I'm saying because is the clean version of what people are saying, IT people are saying once they realize that they've been a victim of something like this, especially when they think they're doing everything right. It has to be so frustrating, right?
I can't even imagine what this would be like for a, you know, a small or medium business to deal with. I mean, they paid, you know, I imagine a large amount of money to have these types of issues solved. And then that money actually ended up being the vector that allowed the attackers into their network. I mean, it's got to be incredibly frustrating. And the fact that, you know, as more details about the vulnerability emerged, some of these issues were, you know, they were disclosed to the company. They were in coordination with the people patching the bug. And, you know, the timing was super unfortunate.
If these small, medium businesses are using a third-party supply software like Kaseya, what can you recommend to these people, these businesses and organizations when they're installing and operating this type of software?
That's always a tricky question, right? I think what it boils down to is really the question is, how can you tell if a piece of software is at risk for security issues? And there's never going to be a foolproof answer there. But there are some things you can look for to try and minimize your risk. And I mean, and after all, that's what we're all after, right? And personally, what I do is I look at the company and I Google it and I see, has the company been around for a number of years? Does the software seem well respected in the industry? You know, if all of that is true, the next step I move on to is I look for their advisories. I look for patches for security issues, right? Companies who take security seriously are going to find and patch security issues. Anyone who says they don't have security issues simply isn't looking hard enough. And I assure you, the bad people are. So you want to find somebody who's looked for these issues, who's found them, who's patched them. And then if that's true, actually go click on one. Just find one that sounds super scary and click on it and read the details and see if it sounds like they match up with the severity and if they sound like everything is in there, you know, completely. You know, you want to make sure that the vendor's not holding back details, that they're being honest about it, and look and see if it's been reported by an outside party. If you can find an advisory that's been reported by an outside party that credits the researcher who found it, that seems to disclose the details responsibly, clearly, and concisely, and it looks like the coordination with the researcher was hand in hand and everyone walked away happy and better off for it, that's a company that has a really solid security posture. You know, the only other things I would look for is, you know, a product security baseline. You know, look for their commitment to not make simple mistakes like default passwords or old libraries, right? Or default accounts. Things like that, a lot of companies will have in their product security baseline. Now, they may not always hit every single one, right? But all we can ask for is that they do their best to try and avoid those types of issues. And so if you can see those things, I think that's a really good way to try and determine if a company is taking security seriously and if it's someone that you can at least be relatively confident isn't going to make terrible mistakes.
Google and transparency, right?
Exactly.
Google and transparency, I like it. I wrote those notes down myself. So when I'm doing it on my own, I will know what to do. Hopefully, knock on whatever it is that I have around me to try and protect ourselves. You talked a little bit about these bad actors. What do we know about the people specifically behind this Kaseya attack?
I think when you look at the Kaseya attack, there's one thing that's really unfortunately true, and that it was that the attack was deployed before the 4th of July holiday in the US, and it was deployed effectively Friday night Eastern time, maybe Friday afternoon. But either way, I think the timing of it is relatively suspicious. You know, if I look at it from an attacker's perspective, I'm going to want to attack and deploy ransomware when no one's around. And so if I'm going to do that, I'm going to do that in the middle of the night. And that might be over a holiday weekend, right? That makes sense. But I'm not going to do it at the end of the day when people are there, especially when Saturday and Sunday are less than 48 hours away. And so that leads me to think that there's some sort of political motivation and a political statement with these types of ransomware, which is always super concerning. You know, you never want to have your business at risk from criminals, but you especially don't want to have your business at risk from criminals with a political motive, because at least if it's just a money thing, then it's a little bit easier to deal with. There's a little bit less variables at play. When there's a political angle, you know, you've really got to figure out, are they going to give you my files back? Can I trust them? You know, what other data has been compromised? Am I one of the more interesting targets where they may have poked around the network a little bit more before deploying the ransomware? So there's a lot of other angles that come into play. And unfortunately, this one looks like one of the more complicated situations.
It makes it tough for you to do your jobs, for the businesses that are losing their livelihoods. It makes it so difficult for them when it's a political motivations and there's only so much you can do and there's the targeting of it. It's very different than someone like a privateer. Is that correct?
Well, that really is what the privateer angle is, right? If we take a step back and we look at the types of cybercrime, there's the standard monetary type attack, right? It's someone just out to get money, someone spamming ransomware, maybe using like a PDF just randomly around the internet, or maybe even at specific companies. But then there's a little bit of a different actor. And we call these privateer groups. And effectively what privateer groups are there actors that are allowed to operate continuously. They go out of their way to effectively establish a brand. So they have effectively credibility. I hate to say that word, but they're known for accepting payment of the ransom and decrypting files. They're known to be trustworthy. They have built this brand around that, and they operate in a country that's effectively not pursuing them criminally and not cooperating with international law enforcement. And so we deal with these groups a lot, and it seems like we're dealing with them more and more often. And there's often political overtones in the attacks, much like we saw with Kaseya. And then when this attack happened, it was just yet another example of what seemed to be ransomware that was being used to not only perform the criminal activity and capture the money, but also have some sort of political influence in the US.
If I'm understanding this correctly, it sounds exactly like a privateer isn't someone that's just a private person. It's privateer groups that are basically having free reign in a country that allows them to do this nefarious acts. Is that correct?
Exactly. It's a country anywhere where cybercrime is not being actively and aggressively pursued. You know, there's a lot of different places where there's other priorities for law enforcement. And unfortunately, like any other type of crime, if you have crimes that aren't being responded to and aren't being aggressively pursued, you're going to see more of that type of crime. And when you see that with political overtones, you know, like, for example, one of the really common things we see is they don't attack the, you know, the Commonwealth of Independent States, right? And the thought process is that's likely because the actors reside in those states and they don't want to cause trouble with local law enforcement.
That makes sense to me. And you mentioned before that Cisco Talos has done its due diligence in keeping track of the privateers and what's going on, kind of the threat landscape. You guys have been doing it for years and years and years, among the best in the business of it. So when it comes to Cisco Talos and companies and organizations that are just, sometimes it feels like they're doing a little bit of a whack-a-mole, right? Of trying to keep different things out. How can Cisco Talos help with these organizations that are just trying to stay above water from all of these different bad actors?
So that's a good question. You know, it's a lot like asking, how do I stop being a victim of crime? You know, there's not going to be one step that's going to make you bulletproof or make you, you know, invulnerable to crime. Instead, it's a lot of little things that you need to do that you need to make part of the day-to-day way you do business. We have the Talos blog at talosintelligence.com. We have the Beers with Talos podcast, all of which are great ways to get information. We have Twitter, social media. You know, we regularly post new types of research and new actors on the blog, and we go through in each one on ways you can defend yourself. And one of the things that's really important to me and core part of the Talos mission is that we explain to how to defend. If you're a Cisco customer, it's automatic. But if you're not, there's still going to be enough information there that you can defend against these threats. And we also provide the details of all the threats we talk about to the Cyber Threat Alliance so that all of our competitors can look at our research and use that to improve their product. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we're out there to stop bad guys. And if our competitors can help us do that, that's great.
Well, and I'm looking at how you named yourself in this podcast recording. It says Craig Internet Police. So I love that way of how you describe yourself. And as you describe of like, how do you protect crime in general, right? So just like a police officer or detective has a ton of sleepless nights about what is happening, you know, out on the streets, what is causing you sleepless nights out on the internet?
Well, I feel like I need to explain that now. So what happened was years and years ago, we were dealing with a group called SSH Psychos. They were operating out of an IP space. I believe it was in China, and they were producing more SSH traffic than the entire rest of the internet combined by orders of magnitude. So if you graph the entire planet's SSH traffic, it would look like a flat line. SSH Psychos was like a tremendous peak. It was just ridiculous. They were literally like producing, you know, 9 out of 10 SSH packets for Earth. And it was just this little tiny net block operating out of this one network. And so we put out a call to action to all of our partners and competitors. And we provided all the details and background information for people to look at SSH Psychos and what they were up to. And so the result of it was that many of the backbone providers of the internet joined with us in taking SSH Psychos off of the internet. At that point, we were angrily called, "Who do you think you are? The Internet Police." And so we promptly had business cards made and the nickname stuck for a while.
And it's still sticking. I love it. Wear it with pride. Do you still have those business cards?
I have a drawer full, yeah.
Oh,
nobody,
my gosh.
Nobody,
can you
nobody
send me
takes
one?
Them anymore. Absolutely.
Oh, I want that business card. I'm so glad. Yeah. That is like one of the best stories. I love that anecdote. I love that anecdote.
The long version is in the Beers with Talos podcast, probably one of the earlier episodes. I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm sure you can just Google it and it'll pop up.
All right. We will look for that one for anyone who wants a super long version. And I'm guessing that color commentary from you and the rest of the co-host will be very funny, right?
Absolutely.
All right. But okay, you explain the background of the Internet Police, but what is keeping you up at night?
You know, I think one of the biggest problems we see is just the continued escalation of cybercrime, and there's not really any stop in sight. You know, we've seen political calls for action, and it just doesn't seem like it's had a lot of influence yet. Now, we did see our evil go silent. I think probably more likely that's a little bit of a break, go on holiday, come back, rebrand, new version. So, you know, it's too early to say. But I think one thing we do need to look at is coming together as an industry and trying to find effective ways to deal with this threat, helping people figure out how they can avoid paying the ransom, if at all possible. You know, I think it's important to realize you can't just say, don't pay the ransom. There are situations where you may have to pay the ransom, right? I mean, there are real world examples of hospitals being attacked in the middle of a worldwide pandemic where people's lives are at stake. Those types of attacks are very similar to what somebody would do and a literal war in order to hurt the enemy. And so, you know, you can't say don't pay the ransom, but what you can do is educate users, educate system administrators, help them find other options, help them understand, you know, if you are attacked, if this does happen, how do you limit the impact, right? And you can turn on things like two-factor authentication, right? You know, some of the new passwordless stuff. So there's a lot of different options you can look at, and that'll add security layers to try and minimize the damage. But at the end of the day, all of these involve being prepared and making sure that you're ready for this type of threat to come to your network, because at some point, someone will try. It will absolutely happen.
And with all of the attention that Kaseya has reached, I'm guessing a lot of like regular Joes and Jessicas are really wondering, okay, well, yes, this hit businesses, but if I'm just at home doing my thing on my laptop, how concerned do I need to be about something like this? And what do you do, Craig, for your own security, for your family's security?
Yeah, so everyone should be concerned about computer security. We have had examples that we've published about attacks that don't target what I would call commercial software to get at users, right? The CCleaner campaign was another supply chain attack where it hit millions and millions of users across the internet. And you wouldn't consider that enterprise level software. So, you know, what I do and what I encourage people to do is look at what they really need computers for and determine if they could get by with something a little bit more locked down, like an iPad or a Chromebook, right? Something where if they did make a mistake and if they did click on the wrong thing, can the damage be mitigated right outside of the box? I think if those options don't fit, well, then you need to look at ways to secure what you're on, right? Make sure you're running from a non-administrative account. Make sure that you have security updates set to automatically install. Make sure that you're not reusing passwords, that you have a password manager. Make sure that you keep your browser up to date, that you, you know, don't install any plugins, don't install any couponing apps or anything weird like that. And just act responsibly on the internet. You know, realize that this has probably got more information and more of your financial data than anything else in your possession. And so you need to treat it accordingly.
All great advice. And I think we are going to leave it with that. Craig Williams, thank you so much. He's the director of outreach for Cisco Talos. For people who want to learn much more about Cisco Talos and, you know, all of these great tips that he has talked about, I recommend that you go on and read their blogs. Do you know the web link for it?
It's blog.talosintelligence.com.
Okay, blogs@talosintelligence.com. Go there to learn more about it. And as he mentioned, he has a fantastic podcast himself called Beers with Talos that I highly recommend. They dive way, way deep into this stuff, which is always really, really good. I appreciate your time, Craig.
No worries. It's been great. Thank you.